Hi, I'm an ancient demon with a cuckolding fetish, Taylor.
And I'm the yellow filter that immediately lets you know that we're in Mexico, Jemmy. And this is the Final Girl Files. This week we watched Blumhouse's cinematic masterpiece, Truth or Dare, released in 2018, directed by Jeff Wildlow, Lucy Hale, Tyler Posey, Sophia Taylor Alley, Violet Bean, Nolan Gerard Funk, and Hayden Setso, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. Truly a showcase.
Yep.
A showcase of just the stupid fucking teen horror movies that came out in the 2010s. God, I miss them. God,
Truth or Dare, Truth or Dare to me is like the death knell of the stupid 2010s teen horror.
I miss them so much, Taylor.
Me too.
After the pandemic, we haven't gotten that many. Like, there were a few after Truth or Dare, I feel like.
Choose or Die.
Choose or Die doesn't count. Choose or Die wanted to be an A24 movie, and it wasn't.
Yeah, that's true. This movie, on the other hand, knows exactly what it is, and it's terrible.
So bad, and it's my favorite. It's my favorite.
I know you love this movie.
What are your memories with this movie, Taylor?
You know, the first time that I watched this movie was with you.
I do.
You came into my home, you brought cats, and you also brought Truth or Dare on the same trip. I think Truth or Dare may have been, if not the last movie, one of the last movies that we watched before you left.
I feel like the last movie we watched... No, because the movies we watched before I left... No, sorry, the movie that I watched before I left your house was Wish Upon, which has a very similar energy to this movie.
Yeah, it was like that morning on the last day, because I do remember, like, pausing the movie to, like, eat breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
And...
We went out, right?
Yes, because we went to the diner to go get breakfast, and we, like, paused the movie, and you were, like, you know, like, getting dressed and whatever before we went out, and I was just sitting there staring at the TV, the paused TV, which was paused on the scene where Olivia confesses to Marky the thing that happened just before her dad died. And it was like halfway through that speech, and we paused it, and I was just staring at it while you got dressed, like, what is this movie?
That's how you know that scene has absolutely no, like, none of the emotional weight that they wanted it to have, because we literally paused in the middle and we're like, we need to get breakfast.
Yeah, I literally, like, we didn't even wait until the end of the scene. We paused it literally right in the middle of the speech, and we were like, let's go get breakfast.
And we were valid for that.
Because that scene has zero emotional resonance. So what are your memories with this movie?
Oh, God. I remember seeing the trailer for this movie in theaters. I can't remember what movie I was going to see. It was probably some other, like, horror movie. And, like, from the moment that I realized what this movie was, I immediately became completely fucking obsessed with it. I was like, I need to see this movie. I need to see this movie in theaters on opening night or I will die. Because I was just so obsessed conceptually with how completely fucking stupid it looked.
I remember that you literally had a countdown on your phone.
I did. It blew my mind. I don't know what it was. I was just like, this is the most unfathomably stupid movie idea I've ever seen in my life. And
you imprinted on this movie like a kitten. Like,
I love it. Like, it captured me. It captivated me. I was like, how did anyone think this was a good idea? And apparently the backstory of how this movie got made is that, like, someone told Jason Blum that he should make a movie about Truth or Dare, and he literally went up to Jeff Wildlow. He was like, hey, do you want to make a movie called Truth or Dare? And he's like, yeah, sure, what's it about? And he's like, that's all we have, it's just called Truth or Dare, and go from there. It makes everything about this movie make a glorious amount of sense.
It's all coming together now. That is so fucking funny, and I had no idea about that, but it makes complete sense with this film.
I actually found that out from the Kill Count video that Dead Meat did about this movie. So I did see this movie opening night in the theaters, and God, it was every bit as gloriously stupid as I thought it was going to be. And it's just... the gold standard for my favorite kind of shitty horror movie is this film. And it is a film.
It is a film.
So, should I enlighten our audience to the spellbinding plot of this film, Taylor?
The thing about this movie is that it has, like, kind of a dense plot for no reason. So, yeah, I would love for you to try to explain it to our audience.
Well, when I do this, I just read the little, like, blurb that's on Google when you type in the movie's name. And this is a pretty, like, dense paragraph, so strap in, listeners. Olivia, Lucas, and a group of their college friends travel to Mexico for one last getaway before graduation. While there, a stranger convinces one of the students to play a seemingly harmless game of truth or dare with the others. Once the game starts, it awakens something evil, a demon which forces the friends to share dark secrets and confront their deepest fears. The rules are simple but wicked. Tell the truth or die, do the dare or die, and if you stop playing, you guessed it, you die. You guessed it was not in there. Just FYI.
I was going to say, that would be very self-aware of whoever typed up that little thing in the Google
summary. No, that was
summary.
A little embellishment by yours truly. This movie is about a haunted game of truth or dare, and
yep.
What a stupid fucking idea. Of all the games, I want to say, like, later on in this movie, it's kind of implied that Calix the demon, who we will get into as this movie's most disturbing character.
His name is Calix.
His name is Calix.
Which sounds, I gotta say, a lot more sci-fi than...
It does. He sounds like the brooding love interest in a YA dystopian novel.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's definitely a Hunger Games ripoff where one of the two boys is named Calix.
For sure, and he's like the dark, brooding, edgy one, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway. No, but it's implied that the first game he possesses is like a game of hide and seek, which, like, listening to that and like kind of, I just put those pieces together like this time watching this movie, and I'm like, that maybe wouldn't be a better movie, but it does sound scarier than Truth or Dare, at least. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Ready or Not proved that hide and seek can be scary.
Exactly. Like, Truth or Dare just seems like the least scary game ever to, like, possess. Can I say something about this movie, which is very funny? It has nothing to do with, like, the plot or anything, but I think it's just a funny little anecdote. So, in 2018, I believe, for Halloween Horror Nights, they had a maze called, I think it was like the Horrors of Blumhouse or something, and it was like...
I remember this.
Yeah, it was like Truth or Dare, Unfriended, and I want to say either Insidious or Sinister. But the thing is, in crafting, there was like three different sections. No, sorry, it was Truth or Dare, Unfriended, and I think The Purge. It was one of those. And... In crafting the Truth or Dare section, I think the designers realized that, like, there aren't really a lot of scenes in Truth or Dare that lend themselves well to, like, a scare maze. So, what they had to do was make a scene that was not in the movie, but it was, like, the flashback with the nuns. They had to, like, do something with that because everything else just did not lend itself well. If you just, like, if you look up walkthroughs of this scare maze, you can tell these designers are just, like, reaching as far as they can to try and make something scary and interesting out of this terrible fucking movie. And it's chef's kiss. Chef's fucking kiss. I love everything about this movie.
The wildest thing to me was that, like, during the scene where they go to, like, I forget her name, the old woman, and they, like, get her to tell them, like, the dark Calix backstory. Right. She's telling this story about how, like, you know, when I was a young nun and, you know, we called upon this demon to protect us from this, like, I think it was, like, a priest who was, like, abusing them. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, this is a 10 times more interesting idea for a movie than whatever the hell this is.
Truly.
I would watch the shit out of that movie. That would be a great movie. Even if it was bad, it would be way more fun.
It would be, like, more interesting. It would have, like, more to do than following a bunch of stupid fucking college kids around. Okay, so I want to start out our actual conversation about this movie with... Sorry, this film.
Yeah.
It is a film, get it listeners.
Fucking straight, Jemmy. God.
It is a film, listeners. It is cinema.
It is a film.
I love, and when I say I love, I think it's hysterical, the, like, clumsy attempts to integrate social media into this movie. You can tell... my actual note here, let me just read it out. This movie's clumsy attempt at incorporating social media is such proof that no one on this writing team knew a damn thing about it. Glorious.
I know, it's wonderful.
Like, you see, they try to integrate, like, Snapchat. They even say, like, the stupid truth or dare face, which I need to know who okayed that. I need to know who saw this. It was like, yeah, that's scary. Put it in. They even say at one point, like, it looks like a messed up Snapchat filter. And it's like,
why would they say that out loud?
That's not scary. And the way that, like, Olivia has a YouTube channel and it's mentioned at the beginning and then never brought up again until they need it again at the end. And they use Facebook.
How famous is she?
I don't know.
Like, here's the thing. Like, okay. So we're getting into, like, jumping around, but, like, at the end when they decide, like, okay, the best way to get rid of this curse is to spread it to a bunch of people via Olivia's YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. It shows people watching the video in, like, different countries. Like, there's people, like, in, like, cities all across the world. And it's like, how big is her audience? And if her audience is that huge, why in the goddamn world is nobody recognizing her when she's on vacation?
I feel like, and I could be wrong, but it feels like this maybe would be the kind of video to, like, start on a small channel and then go viral for, like, a bunch of people being like, wow, look how weird and creepy this is. Like, you know, I could buy that.
Yeah, but, like, wasn't the whole thing that she has a big audience, so they're putting it on the internet? Like, they're using her platform.
It could be just big enough that, like, it gets... I don't know why I'm trying to, like... I'm not trying to defend it. I'm just trying to,
like... You're devil's advocating this fucking movie for some reason.
This fucking film, Taylor.
This film. I'm sorry. But, yeah, it just confused me. Because I was like, is she supposed to be, like... You know, is she supposed to have, like... thousands, millions of subscribers? Like, is she, like, a huge YouTube channel?
I have no fucking idea. I have no idea.
And if she is a huge YouTube channel, why in the fucking world is she filming videos on her laptop webcam in her dorm room?
God only fucking knows. See, Taylor,
a fucking tripod, Olivia!
Taylor, no one on this fucking writing team knows how YouTube works. They think that's how teenagers are doing.
I guess.
No one... These are all, like... people in their 30s and 40s. They have no idea. They have no fucking clue.
Yeah, it just made me mad as a youth.
I don't know.
Youthful person, it made me mad. Because I was like, these people don't know how YouTube works.
I could buy a world where, like, that creepy truth or dare video goes viral or something. But, like, it's still fucking stupid.
It's just, it's emblematic of a larger misunderstanding of how social media works.
I have three different notes here that just say exposition and it's underlined.
Yeah.
Like, the dialogue, especially at the beginning of the movie, the dialogue is so, like, clearly exposition dumpy. It's hilarious. Like, we've been friends for years, Olivia. Always been you and me. We haven't been apart for, like, a week since we were kids. Like, okay. Like, come on. Come on now.
Hey, Olivia, don't you remember that it's our last summer before we graduate? Like,
it's like the room level, like, he's my best friend.
Jesus Christ. Lisa, you are my future wife.
I'm not wrong, though.
No, you're not. Tommy Wiseau could learn a thing or two from the writers of the Truth or Dare film.
Truth or Dare,
by the way, this movie has 4 credited writers.
You literally could not tell me a less surprising amount of information.
Which is how you know it's the best, you know?
You gotta love having four writers. You said four, right?
More writers means better movie, right?
Of course. Well, yeah, Taylor, more is always better, right?
More writers, better movie.
They should
movie.
Have had another one.
They should have had five writers. And then one of the writers is Jeff Wadlow, who is my enemy.
I'm so upset because there was a movie before the pandemic. There was a movie slated to come out that was called Magic 8 Ball. And it was about the Magic 8 Ball. And Jeff Wadlow was going to direct. And I will never forgive the world for denying me that movie.
The fact that that Magic 8 Ball movie got canceled is, for real, it's a hate crime against you personally.
It literally is.
It's a gemmy-phobic hate crime.
It is a gemmy-phobic hate crime. COVID is gemmy-phobic. You heard it here first, guys.
Specifically because it led to the cancellation of the Magic 8 Ball movie. Okay, so... Jeff Wadlow has directed this... And he's directed Fantasy Island.
Oh, a film. Another film.
And he directed a movie called Cry Wolf from 2005, which is a shitty teen horror movie.
But it's like, Cry Wolf, I think, was one of the more, like, Scream knockoff shitty teen movies, rather than, like, the 2010s Blumhouse kind of vibe.
Yes, Cry Wolf was, like... You know, very, like, I Know What You Did Last Summer, like, urban legend type beat, you know?
Yeah.
It's more in that vein. So, like, Jeff Wadlow has just been riding the other people's trend coattails for teen horror for his entire career.
I'm sorry, I'm still thinking about Magic 8 Ball.
I need to see Cry Wolf, because if it's as bad as this movie and Fantasy Island were, it's gonna be very entertaining.
I feel like I watched part of Cry Wolf at one point, and I never finished it, so I don't know what that says.
The funniest thing about Cry Wolf to me is that it's based on the game Werewolf, which is also the game that Among Us is based on.
Oh my god, it's all connected.
So
it's all connected!
I really want to watch it, just because I feel like I'm gonna, like... While watching Cry Wolf, just completely regress into 12-year-old mode and be like, Among Us.
Amogus.
Amogus.
Sus. 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 Amogus. Sus. Sus.
Sus. Sus. Amogus.
I hate this podcast.
Me too.
I genuinely hate this podcast.
Anyway, this isn't an episode about Cry Wolf. This is an episode about Blumhouse's cinematic masterpiece, the film Truth or Dare.
I think it's been long enough, Taylor. I think we need to address... That this movie, this film...
Oh, no!
...is a cornerstone of the cuck horror cinematic universe.
This is not only a cornerstone, it is the film upon which the cuck horror cinematic universe was built.
Every time I watch this movie, it shocks me with how much, like, cuckolding is at the center of its everything.
Yeah.
Like, it's so much... Even before the sort of truth or dare element comes into the movie, like, there's cuckolding. It's within the first 10 minutes. Like,
I love also, by the way, how extremely unsubtle the movie is. Like, the boyfriend, Lucas, comes in and kisses Marky, and Olivia's just, like, doing the most obvious, like, glance between the two of them. It's really good.
The most, like, lovelorn, like, oh.
It's like the director told her, like, all right, you need to look so jealous right now. And she had no idea what, like, subtle jealousy looks like. So she just did, like, the most comedic.
The writing face. In this movie is about as subtle as an anvil to the face. My favorite instance of this is that a character named Brad is introduced. And you can tell the director, Jeff Wadlow, took this young man aside and was like, your personality is being gay.
Yeah.
That's
it. Brad's entire... The entirety of Brad's character is that he is gay, and that's it.
That's it. He's gay. The way he, like, just walks up to, like, presumably the only other gay guy at the party they're all at, and just starts kissing him. Yeah, Jeff, that's how gay people act.
It's also really funny to me in that scene when, like, you could, like, the other characters, like, all of his friends, which, like, by the way, no gay person has ever been in a group where they're the only gay person, but go off, I guess.
Literally.
But on the other hand, like the thing about this movie is that, like, all of the friends are so, like, aggressively accepting of him in the way that only a straight writer would ever...
Yeah.
Right? I don't know how to articulate it in a way that makes sense, but if you're gay and you've seen movies with gay people, you'll understand what I mean.
Yeah, it's very, like... Yeah. I can't really articulate it either, but, like, if you're gay, you know what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's like the writer wants to make a point of being like, oh, his friends are so accepting of him, even though he's a gay.
And if you're not gay, stop listening to this podcast. No, kidding.
It's not for
I'm
you.
Kidding, I'm kidding, no. I'm kidding.
Happy Pride Month.
Happy Pride. Oh, God, I can't believe our fucking Pride Month movies are going to be this one and the one we're planning on doing next. That's horrible.
Yeah.
What have we done?
Next year we'll do like a gay.
Yeah, next time we'll do some Saw movies.
Yeah. All right. God. All right, God. Continue with the cucking talk, I guess.
Continue with the cuck talk. Yeah, sorry. Back to cuckolding, as all things with this movie must. Like, every dare or, like, truth thing that Calix gives every, like, member of the love triangle has to do with cuckolding. And it just gets to a point where it's egregious. Like, Calix, is this just a kink for you?
Calix makes Olivia and Lucas fuck each other.
He makes Olivia, like, tell an entire, like, library full of people that Marky is constantly cheating on Lucas. And then he's like, what's the next one? I think he's like, yeah, break Olivia's hand, and then he makes Lucas convinced that he has feelings for Olivia. And then it's the fucking. And then it's the, like, who do you actually love, Olivia or Marky? Like, Calix, this is getting weird. You can't just force your kink on people like this.
You need consent, Calix.
I understand that you're getting off to this, but it's not right. It's not ethical. This isn't what you should do. You need to find more people who enjoy this and make friends with them. You can't just insert yourself into this, like, den of weird straight people, as much as it's tempting to sow discord among the straights. Believe me, Calix, I understand. But you can't just do that. It's not right.
It's not right, Calix. Calix's most egregious sin is forcing his kink on other people without their consent.
It's true. That's what they do in hell, I guess.
Oh my God. It's so bad. Like, can I also say, please. I was shocked at how, I don't want to say graphic, but, like, you see side of, like, full side of body during the sex scene.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I think I have a note that's just, did we just see pubes?
It was so weird. And, like, listen, I'm not, like, prudish or anything. Oh, like, no, I wasn't, like, you know, I wasn't, like, weirded out by it on a this offends me level. I was like, this just doesn't seem like the type of movie where you would see this, like, this level of, like, full-on fucking.
Yeah, it's a PG-13 movie, so...
It's so weird! I was like, how is this PG-13?
They showed that, but then they also... When it showed one of the texting conversations, they had to put SMDH instead of SMFH. What's the line here, Jeff? What's... Like, I don't know... I'm struggling here, Jeff. I'm struggling.
But we saw, like, very nearly graphic sex. I mean...
Yeah.
It was so weird. I was like, this is, like, a lot. For a movie like this, this is a lot. It was bizarre.
Also, once again, Calix just suddenly deciding this is a threesome now. Like, sir, you need consent for that.
Yeah, you can't just jump into people's bodies when they're fucking. Like, you can't do that.
That's not cool, Calix.
That's not consensual. It's so weird. That scene is so weird. Like mid-fucking, Lucas's face turns into... No,
that's Olivia's.
Olivia's face turns into scary Snapchat face. And she engages in some autoerotic asphyxiation.
Again, Calix, something you need consent for. This isn't cool, man.
You can't just toss that on people. That's something that you need to talk about beforehand. establish a safe word. Like, you need boundaries for this kind of a thing.
Exactly. I like that Calix, despite being, like, presumably some ancient demon from the depths of hell, basically has the personality of, like, a mean gay barista.
Yeah.
When it's busy in hell and the cuckolding demons get mean.
Yeah, literally.
Like, he's so mean.
I love him.
There's no menace to this demon.
Hey, Jenny?
Yeah?
I love him.
Do you?
I do. I kind of do. he's delightful.
I do have to say, like, where's my note? Oh, here he is. Love that Calix saw this painfully heterosexual love triangle and immediately decided to sow discord. Like, I can understand that. I understand seeing a group of straights with, like, so many problems and issues going on and just being like, I'm gonna make that worse. I think I'd do that if I was a demon.
Just find a group of straight people and they're, like, one gay.
And their pet gay person, yeah.
They're single gay. By the way, okay, can we talk about the thing with Ben, is his name? Brad.
Yeah, his name Brad is Brad.
And his father.
Oh my god, I have so many fucking notes about this.
What was that? Because, okay, so at the beginning of the movie, like, we very firmly established that this guy is, like, not only, like, weird about the idea of his son being gay, but, like, homophobic.
Literally, they say the word homophobic. Also, again, this is relayed to the audience through incredibly expedition-heavy dialogue.
He's literally walking with Olivia, and he's like, and my homophobic dad, and it's like, okay, well, that's not how people talk, but okay.
Thank you for saying that for the audience, now we know he has a homophobic dad. You couldn't have showed us that.
They use the word homophobic, so, like, I don't know, when I hear the word homophobic, I think, like, we'll kick you out of the house if you come out to them.
Yeah.
But, like, when he does come out to him, it's like they chickened out of having there be consequences because they were like, oh, we don't really want to do, like, a confrontation with homophobic dads. So they just randomly have him be like, and I love you anyway, son. Like, what was that?
Okay, but, like,
was that earned?
Even then, it's so fucking weird because, like, okay, you have this buildup to, you know, the dad is homophobic, he doesn't know, and Calix makes him, like, come out to his dad, except it all happens off screen. We never see a single, like, moment of him actually coming out to his dad. It just, like, cuts away after Calix asks truth or dare, and then there's, like, a little bit with Lucas and Olivia in the hospital waiting room, and then Brad just comes out and is like, hey guys, the game just made me come out to my dad. You didn't see it, but it did happen. And then it's like, it's all off screen. Like, they just chicken the fuck out of having, like, actual consequences or, like, anything
It's like one of the two conflicts in this movie that is very well established. You have the love triangle problem, and then you have this guy is gay and his dad is a homophobe. And you get no real resolution for that. We just get told, like, it went fine. He's cool with it. Like, okay.
Like, all right, you could have showed that to us, but I guess none.
And, like, it's really weird because
I bet none of those fucking writers were gay and they were just like, we don't want to touch this.
Okay, you know, but, like, if you didn't want to touch it, then why was this a plot point in the first place?
Because they wanted to have their cake and eat it too, Taylor. They wanted to be able to be like, oh, look, we have a gay character and we're going to do this kind of plot line with them and then just not actually do it because they're a bunch of pussies.
He could have had literally any other secret from his dad.
Literally, yeah. But no, they wanted to get gay people in, I guess, except it wasn't really in the marketing that this guy was gay.
It's so bizarre. Like, he's he he comes into the hospital scene, and he interrupts the straight drama, and he's like, the demon made me come out to my dad, but it's fine. He was cool with it. And then, like, later on, we see an interaction with him and his dad where the demon makes him do something that has nothing to do with the gay thing. It makes him, like, point a gun at his dad, which is like, okay, fine. We have one established thing that the demon can take advantage of. The demon was fully willing to take advantage of the love triangle thing for like 3 or 4 different dares in a row, but he couldn't harp on the gay thing more than once. Anyway, he's like talking to his dad, and he says like, the demon like is like, okay, you have to point a gun at your dad and make him beg for his life, and it's like, oh, okay, that's kind of weird, but
again, Calyx. Keep your kink out of this.
Keep your kink out of, yeah. You can't force other people to play into your kinks. It's not cool. But, so, I keep wanting to say that his name is, like, Ben or Bruce, but it's not. It's Brad. I don't know why his name would be Bruce.
You got Batman on the brain, Taylor.
It just kind of feels like a gay name.
Again, you got Batman on the brain.
Yeah, I do. Anyway, so, he goes to, he's like, Dad, I have to tell you something. I have to tell you something else. And the dad is like, you know I'm okay with it. Like, the dad literally says something like, you know I love you anyway.
You're still
like,
son, or whatever.
Yeah, that's what he says. He goes, you're still my son. And it's like, okay. So
this was never actually a problem.
It's so weird. Why was this even a thing in the first place? If it has no real consequences, like, he comes out to his dad and it's fine.
Was it just, like, in the era where people thought that this was the only plot that a gay person could have?
It was 2018! We Love, Simon had already come out!
But, like,
I don't know, it's just, like, what?
Hey, let's talk about how there's a Daniel Radcliffe variant in this movie.
I will not have you slander Lin and Liberato's good name on this podcast.
He looks like Daniel Radcliffe in this movie. I'm sorry.
He does look like Daniel Radcliffe in this movie, but he was in that terrible Netflix Eli Roth TV show that I forgot the name of.
I will not have
you drag him under the bus. He is a sexy dude, and he does kind of look like Daniel Radcliffe, though.
Every time I see him in this movie, I'm like, wait, is that Daniel Radcliffe? And it's not.
It's not.
It's not. That's all I have to say about him.
Daniel Radcliffe would knock this role out of the park, though.
Oh, God. Daniel Radcliffe doesn't deserve to be in this movie.
Is he evil?
Daniel Radcliffe?
No, the... Yeah, Jimmy.
Daniel,
yes.
Okay, new topic, listeners. Is Daniel Radcliffe evil?
Why would I be asking you that?
I don't know, but like,
I'm talking about the character in this movie.
I mean, he's just another like player, but yeah, he is kind of, well, this movie has weird moral implications of everything. Like, Olivia's whole thing is that like, oh, she's supposed to be someone who sacrifices the few for the many, but then doesn't do that, which is character development question.
No, it's not. It's not,
but they clearly think it is.
See, my question is she supposed to have been that person all along, or is it that this game brings out a more selfish side of her?
That's a good question. My impression of this film, and it is a film.
It is a film.
Is that she was always that person, and this game was just what brought it out of her. But I don't know what the actual actual intention was there, because there probably wasn't one.
This movie tries to have some like moral.
This movie tries so hard to say something, and boy, yeah. It just doesn't.
It so doesn't. I completely forgot about that aspect of the movie. The, like, weird moral dilemma aspect of it. Yeah, they're like throwing moral dilemmas at each other over the like over the bonfire, and it's like, hey everyone, there might as well be a neon sign above their heads that says like, this is the theme of the movie.
Again, the writing in this film is not subtle in the slightest.
No, it's not. None of the four writers on this film knew anything about subtext.
Nope.
They all saw that one skit that was like, I know writers who use subtext, and they're all cowards.
They were taking the Game of Thrones writers approach in saying that themes are for book reports or whatever.
Eighth grade book reports!
Oh, God.
Oh, I hate it here. Anyway, this isn't a Game of Thrones discussion podcast.
No.
But it could be.
I have not seen enough Game of Thrones for that.
But it's like, it's just stupid. Like, I don't know. My brain is tired. I've been thinking about Truth or Dare for too long.
Too long, too much. You can't think about this movie for too long, because boy... There's just not much to really think about.
The worst part about doing a podcast about Truth or Dare is that
you have to think,
Truth or Dare for longer than anyone, including the writers of this movie, have ever wanted anyone to think about Truth or Dare.
God,
Truth or Dare was never meant to be dissected the way that we are dissecting this movie. It was never meant to be done.
Listeners, we are going against the will of God today.
It's like, have you ever watched like a really old movie on like an HD television and you see like things like because it's in so much higher definition than it was ever meant to be seen in, you start noticing like maybe there's like a boom mic in the corner or something, or like, you know, just like little mistakes that, you know, back then nobody would have noticed, but because you're watching it on like a HD television that's like the size of a movie screen in the year of our Lord 2022, that's what talking about Truth or Dare for this long feels like. It feels like it was never meant to be viewed like this,
but we're doing it anyway.
But we're doing it anyway because we hate Jeff Wadlow. I'm just kidding. I have nothing against Jeff Wadlow.
Jeff Wadlow
as a person.
Jeff, you've improved my life, so I love you.
As a writer, you're my enemy.
If there is one thing that I can praise this film for...
Oh, I'm so interested to see what this is going to be, because I can't think of a goddamn thing.
I mean, there are some effects that are practical that I thought were pretty neat. The woman being set on fire in the beginning, practical effect. That was like someone in a burn suit running out and collapsing, so that's cool. Also fun is the scene where Penelope, one of the like bit characters who gets killed off fairly early, she gets dared to walk along a rooftop with a bottle of vodka, and she has to finish it while walking. So yeah, she doesn't have a good time, but that was also practical, and I thought that was neat. They had her in like a harness and stuff instead of like doing green screen, so I think that's cool.
Credit where credit is due.
That's it. That's all I can give this movie in terms of like enjoyable things about it. At least some of the effects are practical.
The actors aren't awful.
No, they're not. Like they have a terrible script to work with, but it's competently acted, competently shot, I guess.
To be fair, I haven't seen most of these actors in anything else. I know that one, I think the main girl is from like Pretty Little Liars, which I've never watched.
She was also in Fantasy Island.
Yes, she was in Fantasy Island. She, you know, I won't get into Fantasy Island spoilers, but she had more to do in that movie and she was pretty fun to watch. So,
oh, she had so much more to do in that movie.
She had more to do and she had a more interesting role to play in that movie, and she was clearly having more fun in that than in this movie.
Good for her.
So the boyfriend, Lucas, he's from MTV's Teen Wolf, which I have not watched. That was not my 2010 supernatural teen show of choice. Mine was The Vampire Diaries. But if you were into Teen Wolf, he's, I think, the main guy from that
show. I spent most of the 2010s into Doctor Who, so.
He is the Teen Wolf in question.
He's the Teen Wolf, yeah.
He's the Teen Wolf.
I've seen the gift sets, I know.
I know people who were very into that show. I wasn't. I don't know a goddamn thing about it. Yep. But he's okay in this.
Yep. Again, like, competent acting. No one's egregiously terrible. No,
yeah, nobody's standing out. Like, I don't think there were any bad actors in this movie.
Nope. Just a really bad script.
Just a very bad script, yeah. Okay, I think the time has come, and I'm going to caveat this next section with a massive trigger warning for sexual assault and suicide.
Oh, God.
Because we need to talk about Margie's father and that whole thing.
Well, first off, this man is played by Patrick Wilson from The Dollar Store.
Yeah, he is. Right down to the right down to the shirt that's a little too small.
No!
The pecs are out.
No, don't compare him to my father, Ed Warren.
He's grilling!
Just what a fucking bizarro plotline to throw in the middle of this stupid teen movie.
It's so strange because it just completely comes out of nowhere and it's played so dead serious. And it's dark in a way that the other stuff in this movie isn't.
Yeah, listeners, just so you can have some context here, because we don't expect you to have watched Truth or Dare, because it's not a very good movie, and probably, unless you're like me and you love this brand of shitty movie, probably not worth a watch.
Yeah, if you like crappy, you know, teen horror, you should give it a watch, because it's kind of fun, but...
I would say this is a good movie to, like, get a bunch of friends together and, like, get plastered and watch.
Oh, but for otherwise, sure.
Otherwise, not worth your time, really. So the plot point that we're talking about here is the fact that, so throughout the movie, Olivia keeps picking Dare instead of picking Truth, and it's revealed over the course of the movie that she has something that she never wants to confess to Marky. And it's also revealed to us that Marky's father committed suicide at one point before the beginning of the film. And it,
so you're like, clearly these things have nothing to do with each other.
Oh yeah, clearly. So again, caveating this big trigger warning for sexual assault, it is revealed as, you know, the film progresses that Olivia was there the night that Marky's dad committed suicide, and he basically got drunk with her and tried to force himself on her. And it's like,
and she told him that Marky would be better off if he was dead, and then later that night he killed himself. So Olivia feels responsible for Marky's father's suicide.
In the middle of this stupid-ass fucking 2010s shitty teen horror movie, they drop this fucking bomb on us.
It is so, so out of place that it is completely fucking jarring. It feels like it's from a different movie. It is so serious. It's like the acting even, like, shifts a little bit.
Yeah. Like, this so feels bizarre. Like something out of just, like, you know, a normal, like, maybe a darker teen drama, you know? Like,
yeah.
What? Like, why is this here? Why did you do this, Jeff? Or one of the four writers on this movie?
Yeah, let's not necessarily blame Jeff. There were three other writers.
Like, why did you all agree that this was a good idea? Like, what?
It's so strange. And literally, I remember when we paused it to go get breakfast the first time that we watched it, I was like, what the fuck is, what turn did this take? Like, what in the goddamn hell did this movie become?
I'm pretty sure that was one of the times where I had to ask you, like, are you asking me that or are you asking God? Because I don't have an answer.
I believe that was the origin of, like, that as, like, one of our favorite, like, jokes that we do with each other.
And 9 times out of 10, the question is, I'm asking God.
I'm asking God.
because, the answer is, rather.
Oh, like, it's so thorny in a way
it's
that,
so
like,
much.
I dare you to break your friend's hand is, like, not.
I dare you to sleep with your friend's boyfriend. Like,
it's like, teehee, silly teen. And, like, even the homophobia stuff is resolved with, like, and it turned out he loved me anyway.
And then there's just this.
And then it's just like, hi, here's a detour into your father sexually assaulted me, and I told him to kill himself, and then he did. Like, what?
It boggles the fucking mind.
It does. I'm sorry. I just keep saying that it's crazy, but it's so crazy.
It is crazy, is the fucking thing.
And none of the reviews for this movie ever mention how out of place fucking weird it is.
Yeah.
Like, what? We need to talk about something else, because
we do. It's just that that's all we have, like, to say.
We're just gonna keep being like, what the hell?
We're gonna keep asking God, and God is gonna keep not answering us.
Yep.
Can I just say, okay, question for you.
Yep.
Who's the worst person in this movie, Marky or Tyson?
Oh, that's a good question. No, the worst person in this movie is Ronnie.
That's true. But also, like,
the Marky's first thing, pretty bad, though.
Marky's terrible. Like, we just talked about how she might be sympathetic. No. Don't let that fool you. Marky's a shitty friend.
Marky unsigns her friend up for Habitat for Humanity so she can drag her on a shitty vacation. The movie never properly deals with what a horrible thing that is to do.
Literally. Like, it's just brushed off, like, teehee, that's Marky. And then, like, she is genuinely constantly cheating on her boyfriend. Like, that's not an exaggeration. She, like, he's literally right there, like, sitting with his back to her, and she's, like, grinding on some dude.
And then later on, he's, like, the demon makes him say, like, oh, who he loves, and he's, like, I care about you, but Marky will always be the one I love. And it's, like, why?
Why, though? Like, she's terrible to you.
What did she do to you? Is it because you feel bad because of her dad? Like, what?
Well, you see, the truth is that Marky is hotter. No.
I would disagree with that, but go off. I think Lucy Hale is very hot.
She is hot. They're both pretty hot, is the thing. Actually, you know what? The hottest one is Penelope, actually.
Like, you know what? Yeah, woke.
She's really hot. Anyway, that's our ranking of the women in Truth or Dare.
Yep.
I like that they just inserted teenage Patrick Bateman into this movie.
Can we talk about Ronnie? I'm sorry. We're going to talk about teenage Patrick Bateman in a second, but I just think it's really funny that the, like, one of the most awful people in this movie has the same name as my mother's boyfriend.
Oh my god.
And it's just very funny, because he's awful. He sucks so bad.
Yeah, he sucks in a, like, stereotypical douchebag way, where I can't really be mad at it. Like, yeah, he's just a fucking asshole. Yep.
Teenage Patrick Bateman, though.
Why was he like that? Why was he like that? At one point—
Are you asking me, or are you asking God?
I'm asking God! Because, like, at one point, after Ronnie dies, like, the gang, as it were, gets texted a video of his death. And at the end of the scene, you can see Tyson, who is teenage Patrick Bateman, is just, like, watching it again on his phone. And it's just fucking, why is he like that? Why did they do that?
And he's supposed to be, like, their friend. Like, Ronnie is, like, the guy that, like, they go to school with who, like, you know, just tags along with the group because he happened to be vacationing in the same area. But, like, they're friends with Tyson.
Yeah, and he's just, like, I don't know, like that.
Why is he like that?
Why is he like that? God, why is he like that?
It's so funny because there's, like, a bit where he's, like, interviewing with, I think, a medical school, and he's, like, you know, clearly, like, lying about how he wants to be a doctor because he, you know, wants to help people. Meanwhile, you know, it's established through, like, very heavy-handed exposition that he has been, like, forging prescriptions for his classmates throughout his entire college career, which is, like, awesome.
Yeah, love that.
Love that. Definitely not a horrible thing to do. Whatever. It doesn't matter. And, like, that scene is so bizarre to me because he keeps, like the movie keeps faking out having him confess to forging the prescriptions.
Yeah, it's very weird.
It's like they know that, oh, like this is his, like, secret. And so, like, they keep, like, almost going there. And then they back off, and it's like, is this supposed to be, like, tension?
Are you edging us, Jeff?
No, don't say that.
Sorry.
No! You can't say that!
I just did.
Why?
I have a closing remark.
Must we?
Closing remark. It's not about edging.
Good.
I don't like that when people are getting possessed by Calyx, don't like that their eyes flash red. Don't like that.
That was too reminiscent of something a little too close to home.
It was, and I didn't like it. Fuck you, Calyx.
Fuck you, Calyx. Wanna read some Letterboxd reviews?
Yes, I would love to do that.
Okay. So our first review. Hold on. Our first review comes from Brakshi, who says, "The movie. Truth or dare. Me. Truth. The movie. Which Power Ranger do you want to fuck most? Me. Sweating. The pink one, obviously. The movie. Tell the truth. Me. Crying real tears. The red one. I want to fuck them all, but the red one the most. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry."
Amazing.
Gave it 4 stars also. Which...
I don't necessarily agree, but you know what? Go off.
Iana says, "I know how to stop this," Olivia says. "I bet she makes a YouTube video," I whisper to my sister as Olivia pulls out her phone to make a YouTube video.
Oh, it's truly the millennial, not the millennial, the Gen Z answer to everything.
She makes a social YouTube media video.
Well, it would have been TikTok, but TikTok didn't exist at this point.
Oh God. Don't put that into the universe.
I'm not. I'm changing it back. Jeff, don't cover your ears.
Reese says, "In a moment meant to be serious, the main character says, it was like a messed up Snapchat filter and the entire theater lost their shit."
I saw this movie for the first time in an extremely rowdy theater, I forgot to mention.
Oh my God, I bet that was so fun.
Oh, it was.
Abe Dies at the End says, "Blumhouse followed up an Oscar nomination with this, 1 star.
Another Oscar nomination, yeah.
I think it's really funny that the poster for this movie is, like, from the producers of Get Out, which, like, yeah, technically, but, like...
But also, my
but
other
also
favorite
not,
thing...
not that at all.
My other favorite thing is that they were so confident in this movie that they called it Blumhouse's Truth or Dare. Like, they put their whole name on that thing. Like, guys.
And it's like Saw 3D. I'm never letting them go.
Oh, never. It's Blumhouse's cinematic masterpiece, Truth or Dare.
I'm never letting them off the hook for that. Bethany says, "Who wants to help me start a GoFundMe to get Tyler Posey a new agent? 2.5 stars.
Oh, God.
I do think it's funny when movies have actors who, like, have, like, fan bases of their own, and then, like, the entire Letterboxd section is just full of people being like, "I watched this for that one guy, and it wasn't good.
But I did see that one guy."
Lots of Teen Wolf fans in the Letterboxd reviews of this movie, yep. I will say.
That doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
LaRogue says, I could write a whole essay about everything wrong with this film, but I don't even think it would be worth my time. All I can say is I'm currently reeling and taking ibuprofen because of the headache I got from this. This is 2018's The Bye Bye Man.
Oh, The Bye Bye Man. That was another one. Oh, yes. Yes.
Gemma Chow says, couldn't tell the whole way through whether this film was serious or not, but if the 4-year-old kid behind me in the theater watched this and found it funny, so will you. 1 star.
Yeah.
Gerardo simply says, The Caucasity. 1.5 stars.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jack says, I've seen shampoo commercials scarier and less funny than this. 1 star.
So true, bestie.
Matthew Brady says, remember when people thought Battleship was the lowest point for ideas, and everyone joked about what other games should be adapted into movies? Good times. 1 star.
Oh, God.
R.I. fucking P.
I want to observe a moment of silence for Magic 8 Ball.
Yeah. Let's just have a collective...
Like, just...
Moment over. We mourn.
There we go. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I needed that. I needed that closure.
Now you're okay with it.
I've reached the acceptance stage.
You're finally ready to move on.
Finally ready. Yeah.
God. All right. Well, what's your star rating for this movie?
I mean, 1 star. I can't think of anything. Genuinely, I can't think of anything redeeming about this movie, but in my heart, 5 stars.
Yeah, that's how I feel. I think I gave it 2 stars on Letterboxd because at the very least, it's like competently shot and acted. But I think I'm also going to give it 1 star because those factors don't make it a better movie, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, they don't.
They're not redeeming factors.
Yeah, it doesn't make it any less of a fucking bad time to watch
such
this movie.
Shit.
This movie's sad. Shit.
So yeah, one star. But in my heart, 5. Because it's hilarious. And if you listened to this podcast and you were like, this sounds fucking hilarious, please watch this movie.
1 star, affectionate.
Yeah, yes. 100% yes.
Oh, God. Blumhouse's cinematic masterpiece.
And it is a film.
And it is a film. So, listeners, if you follow us on our respective private social medias, you may know that we are going to Disneyland soon. And before that, because of that, we've selected a special film to watch for our next outing. As it were. And I'm going to preface this by saying that I implore all of you to not watch this movie because it is, if you thought Truth or Dare wasn't worth your time, this is not worth your fucking time. Just listen to us rag on it and maybe also watch the Jenny Nicholson video about it if you're really curious. Next time we will be watching 2013's Escape from Tomorrow. And again, everyone look me in the eyes right now. Do not watch this fucking movie. It's
please
bad.
Don't. Please don't.
This is another Thing Bad episode, but it's very important that you all hear us talking about this.
It's gonna be like an exorcism.
I promise you, after this episode, we will go back to talking about movies that we actually like and enjoy. But we need to get this out of our systems.
We needed to do this while we were together in Disneyland. We needed to just punish ourselves a little bit.
We won't be in Disneyland when we record this, but we'll be, it will be right after our trip.
We'll be riding on the high of Disneyland.
We will. So, until then, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok at FGFpod. And it would really mean a lot to us if you would give us those 5 stars on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, do whatever it is you need to do on your podcast platform of choice to let us know you enjoyed our little show today. And we will see you next time for Escape from Tomorrow. Bye, guys.
I'm sorry.
We're both sorry.